Well, friends, you already know this is one of those Sundays where the sermon has already happened. But I've still got some stuff to say, so I'm going to do it anyway. Thank you, Karen, for a word this morning. We've established norms and then punish people for breaking those norms. What does that mean? Okay, so who else in here is getting life from Netflix's revival of Queer Eye? Yeah. Okay, few hands. I'll take them. Who else cried all the way through season 2, episode 1? Okay. Who else fell in love with Mama Tammy and her son, Miles? Living their best life in gay Georgia. Yes, that's right. It's called Gay Georgia. Population 89. Who else sashays through their living room every time gender role flexing Jonathan swishes his long hair, swings a flowing shirt wrapped around a crop top, and proclaims, "Yes, queen!" Like it's an altar call for self-love. Okay, maybe that's just me, except I know it's definitely not just me. Who else is moved by these gay male style guides proudly strolling into people's lives and homes and worlds and offering a healing, transformative vision for toxic masculinity? For machismo? For heteronormativity? For the oppressive normalization of everything from marriage to church to small town America? Who else cried when Mama Tammy, a longtime faithful Christian, talked about what it looked like to ask her black gay son for forgiveness? After she realized that accepting him for who he was the most gospel thing she could possibly do. I think there's a beautiful revolution bubbling in America. Hard to see right now, but just listen. And Queer Eye helps us see it a little better. So does the Me Too movement. So does the record-breaking number of women running for public office. So does the national prominence of work being done by organizations like the Equal Justice Initiative to invite a deeper reckoning with our national history of violence and phobias. See, the collective culture is not just tolerating or accepting queer folk into their predominantly straight space. The collective culture, perhaps, is actively discovering the healing and freedom and possibility that comes from being transformed by the stories, experiences, and perspectives of queer folk, sashays and non-binary outfits alike. The collective culture is getting queerer. Our visions for the future, our policies and boardrooms and drawing boards and wedding photos are getting queerer. And maybe, just maybe, our churches are too. You may think that the story Kia read today is about an Ethiopian eunuch getting baptized. And just to make sure we're all on the same page this morning, let's get to it. A eunuch is a castrated male, someone who in an ancient Near Eastern context would have been, for lack of a better term, queer. About a man who thought he wasn't in God's story, discovering that he in fact was right in the middle of God's story. And we'll get to that. But I'm going to press us to look a little farther in today's story too. I'm going to press us to pay special attention to the baptism that almost gets missed in the story. The baptism of Philip. Because this isn't just a story about an outsider being invited inside. This is a story about the Spirit whisking an insider back outside, about an insider and outsider finding each other, about insides and outsides merging and submerging together in holy water, about outsides and insides becoming one side, about union and intimacy that turned everybody's insides upside down. And as we follow this double-sided baptism, we wrestle with the wall, thank you again, Karen, of normalization. The wall that tells us that things like sexuality and gender are supposed to look a certain way, that men who sashay are dangerous, and women who kiss other women are destroying the fabric of the family. The wall that tells us that men who've been castrated don't get to read from the scroll of Isaiah. That bodies that are queer and black don't get to celebrate the beauty of their bodies dancing in living waters. Today we scale this wall with the full force of the Spirit pushing us forward and outward. When we find the Ethiopian eunuch enigmatic and unknown, there's lots we learn about him and lots we don't. We never learn his name, for example, but we do learn that he's working for the queen of Ethiopia. So he seems to sit inside this strange realm between both a kind of power and a kind of invisibility. And when we find him in the book of Acts, he is traveling and reading from the prophets. Here's what he comes across and begins to mull over deeply in his heart. Like a sheep, he was led to the slaughter. And like a lamb silent before its shearer, so he does not open his mouth. In his humiliation, justice was denied him. Who can describe his generation? For his life was taken away from the earth. Well, that's how the writer of Acts describes the text in Isaiah. It turns out if you actually read the text from Isaiah, the last part goes a little something like this. You ready? By a perversion of justice, he was taken away. Who could have imagined his future? For he was cut off from the land of the living. Yikes. Stricken for the transgression of my people. Can't help but imagine the eunuch reading this passage over and over and over again, slowly, deliberately, intently, for he was cut off from the land of the living, for he was cut off from the land of the living. The eunuch is in a moment, both metaphorical and incarnational, shall we say? Can we say? I said. And he can't help but say, who is this story about? Is he talking about himself? Or someone else? Who is this story about? And let me tell you, as a queer Christian, this moment rocks me to my core. Because even if this text is quote unquote about Jesus, it is most certainly about the eunuch too. Someone who was literally cut off from the land of the living, stricken by a perversion of justice, a man who most likely didn't ask to be castrated, who didn't ask to be understood and interpreted under a certain sexual lens, finds himself in the capital S story. The big story about God and humanity and God's desire for us, a desire that shifts the plates of history towards justice and beauty. What happens when queer folks start finding themselves in the sacred text? What happens when we start saying to our siblings at church, "Look, I'm here. My story is in here." As a eunuch unrolls this ancient scroll, I doubt he ever imagined unrolling his own life and being and body along with it. And so the eunuch realizes that all that he thought cut him off from the world was actually what drew him most closely to the very heart of God. He says, as we all should say, "Now what would keep me from God's full blessing? Baptism." And the answer then and the answer now is nothing. 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 And even though that's more than enough to sit with this morning, I can tell y'all are kind of sitting with it. Guess what? I want us to keep going. Because I can't help but imagine something else equally important happening when I take a freeze frame of this moment. I can't help but imagine Philip's face. Slack-jawed and overcome as he realizes that the Spirit is playing quite a little trick on him. Oh my God. What does prevent him from being baptized? It's almost laughable. Here, these early Jewish Christians are struggling to make sense of whether the Spirit will make room for uncircumcised males. And Philip finds himself chasing after the chariot of a castrated man, reading from the prophet Isaiah. Know any other stories about a man unrolling the scroll of Isaiah and reading from it aloud? What does prevent this man from being baptized? His Ethiopian-ness, his eunuch-ness, his blackness, his queerness. See, this story is as much about Philip's conversion as it is the eunuch's. This story is as much about Philip's baptism as it is the eunuch's. This is queer baptism completely overturning and reimagining and redefining and recreating a straight catechism. A straight set of statements about what this faith is for, about what it means to be Christian. As the writer of Acts describes it, the eunuch commanded the chariot to stop, and Philip and the eunuch went down in the water together. Okay, y'all, I promise I'm not just going for shock value here. And it's possible I've watched too many telenovelas in my day. But honestly, this imagery is pretty intimate stuff. Philip chases after this man's chariot, spends the day in deep conversation with him, sinks down into a cold pool of water with him. And I don't think I'm overreading to say there would have been long embraces and held hands as Philip witnesses the eunuch joyfully accepting his full-bodied self. As the eunuch realizes that the prophet Isaiah and the prophet Jesus have accepted his full-bodied self too. Can you see Philip at the edge of the water, watching, waiting, wondering? I wonder what he heard. Wade in the water. Wade in the water, Philip. Wade, wade in the water. God's doing something in this water. Wade in the water. Wade in the water. Philip, wade in the water. God's doing something in this water. And when this happens, when Philip chooses to believe in the belovedness of the eunuch, his priorities, his vision, his time and energy and imagination shifts too. He's not looking to build unity with all people. Instead, he's looking to build union with God's people, the people that God is demanding his disciples to pay attention to chase after, to dip into holy water with. I promise you that Philip lost some friends along the way, y'all. By choosing to sink into this sacred water with, if you'll allow me, contemporary liberties here, a black queer man. I promise you that Philip lost some reputation, lost some influence, lost some social standing. But Philip, in choosing to bind himself to this eunuch, unbound himself to some other stuff in the process. Yeah. Philip, in choosing a queer baptism, was relinquishing any grip he had on a straight catechism. Philip chose unexpected union over paltry claims of unity. As Mama Tammy stands before her church during their homecoming celebration in season 2, episode 1, in case I haven't mentioned it, of Queer Eye, how can I say that I love God, but I cannot love the ones who are right there next to me? I would call myself a hypocrite. If I'm not being clear with all this talk about an Ethiopian eunuch and a disciple named Philip, well, let me just get right to it. We don't need churches that just let gay people be deacons. We don't need churches that just let gay preachers preach, or let trans leaders be ordained, or let queer weddings happen. See, we need churches that want to get in the water too. That want to choose holy union over paltry unity. Churches that believe that the Spirit is ready to baptize their imaginations, convert their dreams for the future, create something they never could have created on their own. We need churches that are ready to be whisked by the Spirit of God and turn their insides upside down. If you're wondering these days how all these massive walls are going to come down, spend some time asking queer folks how they manage the walls inside them and around them. Ask queer folks how they learn to reinterpret these seemingly impassable and unscalable walls with the sheer force of their bodies teaching them to love. Ask queer folks how they moved and tore down and jumped over the walls of misogyny and institutional violence by exclaiming with the thunder of 1,000 whispers, "My story is in this holy book too." See, people shaped by queer baptism start saying things like, "What can a man who sashays his way through life tell me about how deeply bound I am to my masculinity? What if that masculinity is actually unmanaged misogyny? A brewing violence I've been taught to believe is what makes me powerful and worthy and important? What if it's actually making me distant, damaging, incapable of intimacy? What if I could let that go?" See, people shaped by queer baptism start saying things like, "What can a person who lost family members over their sexual orientation teach me about letting go of the need to keep everybody at my dinner table happy? Will I keep shoving the truth I know they need to hear farther and farther down my chest? What can I learn from a queer person who's been rejected by their social network about living courageously and authentically, even if it means losing some folks along the way?" People shaped by queer baptism start saying things like, "What kinds of relationships, what experiences of intimacy and connection might be just around the corner from me if I could only imagine beyond the boundaries that have been inscribed for me for so long? What kind of love is standing outside my threshold?" Woo! Riding along a chariot, saying holy words in holy bodies in holy ways that I have never heard before. people shaped by queer baptism start writing new catechisms. Kind of like Leonard. New catechisms that invite courage and honesty, that tear down the walls of what's normal and what's not, that desire union more than unity, that can't wait for the Spirit to whisk them whatever which way that Spirit wills. Ones that are ready to get in holy water with holy bodies that mean to baptize them too.